Sports here and 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Kidder, the host, and we're joined by Mr. Glenn Ford of the Black Agenda Report. Thank you, Glenn, for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation, Phil.
I have to say, Glenn, of course, that we want to talk to you about your analysis of the U.S. presidential election, but given the developments in Europe, we can't resist taking advantage of your time to learn what you think of this British vote and the strange aftershocks it is giving off.
Well, I'm delighted to see that President Obama is upset, and most of the world leaders of nations that that are led by folks like President Obama are upset, and Wall Street is upset, and the city of London is upset, and that is cause for people like us, Phil, to be not upset, but quite happy.
There does seem to be a sign of losing their grip here. All kinds of new configurations are coming into being. I want to ask you about all this I shouldn't say crazy, I'm prejudging, but the talk about free trade and the European democratic future. Actually, from here, it looks like they actually constitute a kind of club, and there's a lot of people not allowed in the club, right?
Well, it's a kind of cartel. You know, the anti-Brexit forces put out the mythology that the European Union and its predecessor, the common market, were the source of peace in Europe, that the Europeans haven't been killing each other because they found this commonality in the European Union. Well, what it really amounts to is, first of all, a peace under the dominance of the United States. The Europe could not fall into a war among its own members when they were all totally dominated by U.S. military power after World War II. The EU project, the European project, was a consolidation of the European powers at the top, principally Germany and France, the colonial powers, the recreation of a cartel of the former colonizers, joining forces to make them as a group a real force in the world, although junior to the United States. And so we see that in 2011, with NATO's aggression against Libya, the conversation shifted to how to update and upgrade the European Union's own ready military force that could be used to bring peace and order outside of the boundaries of Europe. And basically, we're talking about Africa, the former colonies. So the EU is another way, or was conceived of as another way, for Europe to rise again as a dominant neo-colonial force in the world, with a military component in addition to, of course, its membership, the membership of most of its members in NATO, all under the United States. It's a cartel of the same class forces that rule in the individual countries, that is finance and corporation.
Yeah, and you know, there's some within the debate in Europe or in Britain, they raise the issue of, well, is there racism involved? However, what you just outlined is basically a racist project. I noticed in the past year that practically every member of the European Union made it a point to fly a few planes over Syria and drop a bomb or two. Which to me you couldn't make a clearer expression of racism, since there's no respect at all for the sovereign government of Syria.
It's like a symbolic salute to the project for ongoing white or European supremacy in the world. We're in it too, sir.
Again, we're speaking to Glenn Ford of Black Agenda Report, Glenn, you have been following the Black Agenda Report's been very carefully studying the U.S. presidential campaign so far. I guess first thing is, there is a syndrome, isn't there, in American politics where particularly progressives and popular movements get blown away by presidential elections every 4 years. Everybody sort of loses their mind.
Yes, everybody gets lost once again in the duopoly. And it's really kind of pitiful. It's not like being lost in a maze where there are many different paths to go, some of which, most of which end up in dead ends. There's two paths, and American political trends and tendencies can't seem to get off of those two corporate trends. And most of, although not all, of Bernie Sanders supporters will find themselves in one of those two corporate lanes. But I think that a significant enough number this election cycle will refuse to take the corporate lane and will try to create a real alternative party, which of necessity would be a social democratic party. And the United States, being so totally corporate dominated, corporations yes. have real political hegemony in this country.
Yeah, we're seeing I'm sorry.
That this will have to be a social democratic kind of party. And there'll be lots of fits and starts and infighting about what social democracy is, in fact. but the project, I think, will begin in some earnest.
Yeah, I took some heart from the fact that someone could challenge for the presidency for the nomination and say to the people whether it was true or not that he was a socialist. And then discover that there's a whole bunch of people like that idea.
There seems to have been a really big closet in the United States with all these socialists hiding in it.
I've heard a few introductory speeches for Sanders where the speaker says, "Well, I guess I can come out now," and say, and that's rather heartening. Except that, as you point out, they're in a dilemma. Now, I read your article in the latest Black Agenda report, and you mentioned that there is this struggle to try to keep the path and keep the faith, and there's been some big meetings, and I believe you might have spoken at one, but I know that you mentioned that Jill Stein, for example, was not invited to help them talk about what course they might take.
Yeah, that was at the People's Summit, which drew in Chicago. It drew about 3,500 activists, a whole lot of different stripes of Bernie supporters, but it was put together by the kind of move on people and Democratic Socialists of America that always fold into the Democratic Party every election season. And in fact, if we're talking about move on types, they never left. They're kind of like a junior left formation of the Democratic Party to soak up energies of people who want to call themselves progressives. Mm-hmm. And they showed their hand by not allowing Jill Stein even to speak. In other words, there will be no alternative, a kind of Thatcherite left.
We Democrats who have semi-come out will not go all the way out.
But the Democratic Party understands that they are in crisis, that they can't contain these forces, and they have to go so far as to pretend that they are these forces. Mm-hmm. And we saw a glimpse of that during the Occupy movement when the party sent out all its little posing as left operatives to become supposedly part of Occupy, which had no discipline and no center, and say that they the Democrats were joining the spirit of Occupy. And we saw Obama adopt the language of Occupy.
Yeah. Sort of like Lyndon Johnson saying, "We shall overcome."
Yeah, of course. If you can't beat them, you try to appear to join them.
Yeah, speaking of Glenn Ford,
and in the end, you do if you succeed in appearing. volunteering to join them, you do beat them.
You win. I think back to the, you know, the sort of sad efforts, and this has been done before. There was the Jesse's Rainbow, and more that had energy and that had class, and it was, we were all going to unite. And I don't know what Jesse's doing anymore, but that he ended up totally absorbed, did he not?
Yes, he did, and I don't think he had any intention of doing anything else but carve a bigger sphere of personal influence in the party for Jesse. I mean, how many years after that did we find Jesse as the basically calling himself the personal chaplain to President Bill Clinton?
Yes,
the first president of the Democratic Leadership Council, the organized right wing of the Democratic Party, and yet he volunteered to be the chaplain.
Yes, if Sanders people should look with stark, look into the stark future if they were to go that path. One other thing about the Sanders thing, I want to get your comment. They say, if I'm to believe Washington Post and New York Times, who are sort of in charge of handling Sanders now, I guess, they say that he has a new strategy of he's going to try to get candidates, people like himself, to run. And the one in the first place he went, I think somewhere in New York, and it looks like that candidate's going to get trampled by the Democratic Party.
Well, that would mean the Democrats trampling another Democrat. What he's shifted into is being a kind of lightning rod for left Democrats to adapt the Sanders Democratic brand, but it's Democrat. It's all in the Democratic lane of this two-lane corporate highway.
I'm curious now, Mr. Dixon writes, of course, a Black Agenda Report. He is a member of the Georgia Green Party, and he has a long piece advocating that people learn how to organize in their own areas and to actually build an organization as opposed to sort of catching the virus every 4 years. Did I get that?
Well, sure, and it shouldn't have taken the election cycle of 2016 to tell us that. In terms of the Green Party, the Green Party has many tendencies in it. In some places, like Georgia, where Bruce Dixon is the co-chairman, it sometimes looks like the Red, Black, and Green Party. In other places, the Green Party is mainly comprised of environmentalists and such, and in other localities, it's difficult to describe it. And Jill Stein doesn't call herself a socialist, although her platform is definitely social democratic. So there are many tendencies in the Green Party, and they are expressed in the work that the various activists under that umbrella do in their local communities. The project here, the project of 2016, that the events of 2016 have made possible, is a national social democratic party to organize those folks who are from the left of the DLC, the right-wing Democrats, who are now so dominant, so hegemonic in the Democratic Party, they're about to elect their third DLC president. First was Bill Clinton, second was Obama, the third one will be Hillary. The new party would the spectrum that it would be organizing would begin on the right-hand side of that party with those Democrats that are to the left of the DLC, to the left of Hillary. That encompasses the Bernie-crats.
Yeah.
But also folks that are to the left of the Bernie-crats as well. I think we're talking about a spectrum that encompasses about 40% of the American public. And in any other country in the world, a party that represented 40% of the public would be huge, if not the dominant party in the country.
Now, I really like that point in your article that the you have these parties and you have the cliques that control them. And but then you have, as you pointed out, 40%. That's a significant number. There, somebody raises the right banner, says the right things, as we found with Occupy and Black Lives Matter.
It doesn't be the dominant party even in Canada. That would be the dominant party in Britain. It would be certainly the dominant party in France.
Yeah.
Any place that you went. But here it doesn't even have a national organization at all. It is not even defined. And we can only measure it by the people who are not represented by the Democratic Party.
Yeah, and are beginning to be seen and to be heard. I was very taken. You point out that Jill Stein is not, as far as I know, she doesn't describe herself as a socialist, but she found a rather nice phrase in dealing with Bernie. She said that, well, we want a political revolution too, but you can't make a revolution in a counter-revolutionary party.
That's right. And
I thought, boy, that's apt.
Paul Street has described the Democrats as becoming more perfect expression of the ruling class in this country. That is a more perfect expression than the Republicans, whose expression, the expression on their face has certainly changed in 2016. Face of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Whose foreign policy positions, if you could call them positions, his pronouncements, certainly seem to be to the left of Hillary Clinton's actual policy.
Yeah, she says a no-fly zone over Syria and corridors, which would mean war.
Sounds like a more perfect expression of the ruling class.
Yeah, and she would probably take a bow when you tell her that.
Yes, well, then she has. She charges $250,000 per bow.
Yeah,
when she speaks to Goldman Sachs and such.
Well, Glenn Ford, it's a pleasure talking to you. As far as I'm concerned, you do speak with those 40%. We look forward to reading your articles in the Black Agenda Report, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you, man.